From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's almost Election Day, and later this hour, we'll talk about one of the nation's most polarized topics. It's climate change, particularly conservative views on the subject. But we start this week with a rundown of recent advances and headlines in science. Joining me now from the London headquarters of the journal Nature is Benjamin Thompson, who heads up the Nature podcast. Glad to have you with us.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks very much.
Let's start with a climate observatory on Mount Everest, or I should say there was until a few years ago. It may get restarted. But first of all, there's a climate observatory on Mount Everest. I mean, what kind of observatory? Is it staffed? What are they actually observing and monitoring there?
Well, yeah. So this is a story of the Nepal Climate Observatory Pyramid, to give it its full name. And you say it doesn't exist. Well, it kind of still does, but it's very much running at sort of skeleton capacity. And it's based around the foothills of Mount Everest, one of the highest kind of observatories of its kind in the world. And its job was to look at levels of pollution and what have you that were in the area and study how these pollutions moved about. And because of where it was placed, it could look at how how this pollution would move up the sides of the mountains and how different types would mix together. You know, once these pollution types mix with sunlight and other compounds, how these things made what's called secondary aerosols, which can affect climate and potentially weather as well.
So, as you said, it's been running at kind of skeleton capacity, lost most of its funding a few years ago. What has happened to rejuvenate it?
Yes, and what I would say is this is by no means a done deal just yet. But the EVK2CNR Association, who helped set up the station, are really hopeful that they can do a deal with the Italian Research Council, who are the CNR, who sort of helped set it up in the first place and will help to start funding it again.
Well, we will keep our eye on that one. While we're on the topic of science in Italy, moving from climate change to earthquakes, Italy was struck by three pretty devastating earthquakes back in 2016. But scientists looking at that event think that this may give them a way actually to be able to make better predictions about at least some types of earthquakes. So what's the advance there?
Yes, I think that's a very important thing to say, some types of earthquakes. So predicting earthquakes is incredibly difficult. And of course, you know, they can be particularly devastating. And this story really centers on a rather historic town called Amatrice, which is in central Italy. And as you say, this happened in 2016, these three earthquakes, and caused around 300 deaths, I believe. But some good news may come out of this tragedy. And the way that these earthquakes struck is very particular. And they're called sequence quakes. So there was three earthquakes, one after the other, which was over the course of several weeks. And in between these three earthquakes, there were kind of little aftershocks, right? And this is different from what you might imagine for an earthquake, which is a huge release of energy in a few seconds and then a lot of subsequent aftershocks. So what's different here is that while the earthquake is moving along its fault, there are these kind of little faults kind of at an angle to this. So kind of like a zipper, I suppose. And these little faults really kind of prevent all the energy being released in one go. So you still get three big earthquakes. Let's not muck about. But rather than having one giant one, they're kind of split up.
Right.
And so what's going on here is if you look at these sort of cross-cutting faults, which act as these barriers, they, you know, it's kind of involved with the underground movement of water and gas. So by tracking how water and gas are moving along this fault and hitting these small barriers, researchers are thinking that maybe, you know, with careful mapping and monitoring and all the rest of it, that they'll be able to give some advanced warning sort of further down the main fault of when these particular sorts of earthquakes might happen.
Well, clearly a lot of challenges with communicating that and figuring out what you would even do with that information, but more information about earthquakes, obviously, would always be welcome. Last but not least, Mars has a lot of mysteries. A lot of them boil down to, could there be life on Mars? We love to contemplate that one. And a recent one that maybe scientists are edging a little closer to a little bit more understanding is a mystery about methane, a greenhouse gas that we're familiar about hearing about here on Earth, but in Mars's atmosphere. And in particular, the fact that, first of all, that there is methane, which means that it must be being produced, at least in relatively modern times, and the fact that it fluctuates seasonally. What are we learning about what might be responsible for that fluctuation?
Yes, absolutely. And what I'll say is to your listeners, I am going to call it methane, so I hope that doesn't offend their ears too much.
Potato, potato, you know, we'll forgive you.
Okay, so bursts of methane have been discovered in the atmosphere of Mars kind of periodically, and nobody really knows from whence they came, right? And I think it was 2012, the Curiosity rover landed on one of its missions as it was trundling around, was trying to sort of measure these methane levels directly and get more of an idea of what was going on. But being Mars, as you say there, it actually made things a bit more complicated.
Of course.
What it showed, though, is that that levels of methane kind of waxed and waned depending on what the season the planet was in. And these levels peaked in the summer. And this was new research presented at a planetary science meeting, which, you know, might help explain what's going on. So it turns out that as the seasons on Mars change and the sun begins to warm up the soil, it seems to be allowing the kind of the methane to percolate up and to escape from the underground and up into the atmosphere, which, you know, it seems like a reasonable explanation, I would say. But, you know, this in itself is a bit odd because methane, you know, should be broken down after a few hundred years by kind of chemical processes. So where is this methane coming from? Is it, you know, something under the surface, some sort of geology or chemistry? Or, you know, with my microbiology hat on, and, you know, obviously that was my background as a scientist, could it be that there are, you know, microbes underneath the soil that are making this methane? Because, you know, if you think about Earth, most of the methane we have comes from living things. And I would say, of course, that's speculation, we don't know, but there's a mystery there to be solved. But these results do chime in, you know, with earlier sort of suggestions from researchers that the sun and the warming of the soil was involved in this methane release, at least. And there could be some more results coming out soon from the ExoMars Trace Gas Orbiter, to give it its full name. And this is a European-Russian spacecraft, which, you know, will be orbiting the planet and can measure methane and where it's coming from in a much sort of a more in-depth way than the rover does. And it might give us more of an answer. And the scientists behind this work have kind of hinted that they might be onto something, but they are keeping their lips very much sealed at the moment.
Well, as much as I would love to know whether or not there is life on Mars, the mystery itself is also kind of fun. So again, we will stay tuned. That is Benjamin Thompson of the Nature Podcast. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Not at all.
Up next, what 18,000 retracted scientific papers do and don't say about the state of science.
You know, yes, let's sort of say there's been some progress, but I don't think it's time for anyone to pat themselves on the back yet.
Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.